From Sylvain Labs, welcome to Critical Nonsense. On our show, we dig deep into cultural ephemera and pose questions to each other to inspire interesting conversations. This is Critical Nonsense.
This week, Aaron asks Joey about sleep, and Joey asks Aaron about taking care of yourself.
Woo!
Yep.
It's weird.
This is Joey.
This is what an Aaron sounds like while screaming.
Sadly, we don't have executive producer and world traveler Jess Vander with us this week. She's out on the road. She's Hunter S. Thompsoning,
if you will.
Exploring America in a Cadillac.
I.e. doing field research.
Yeah. That's partially also why when this episode comes out, last week's episode was a little bit delayed.
Yeah.
Sorry, we love you. Thank you for listening.
Yes.
So this week, Aaron.
Tell me, Joey. Tell me something good.
I just want to talk about taking care of yourself.
Aww.
So as we've talked about at a few different points over the course of our time doing this podcast, I have a new baby.
That was unnecessary. I'm sorry.
And I've never really been particularly good at this concept of self-care anyways. But I'm increasingly realizing how important it is, right? We have, you know, jobs that are fairly demanding and ask a lot of us. And I'm happy to, you know, do that job. Like, I enjoy my job. But then also sort of having the demands of being at home and sleep deprivation and those types of things, I'm realizing now it's been 5.5 months, I guess, since my daughter was born. And I'm like, oh, I haven't done anything for myself. Mm. And it's funny because this has been increasingly a concept in media of like, take care of yourself, self-care, like wellness, all of these things. And up until now, I've kind of just been like, why is this a thing? And now all of a sudden I'm thinking about it, but I want to know, why are we bad at self-care?
We don't love ourselves. Yeah. Really.
You need to just do what Whitney said and find the greatest love of all.
The answer is always do what Whitney says, period. Doesn't matter what the question is.
Unless Bobby's in the room.
Bobby! So I think that there's something nested in that that's really weird, which is just the emergence of the term self-care. Because,
mm-hmm.
like, there's always been, you know, that sort of, like, streak in self-help books. That's what self-help books are, is like a form of literary self-care,
and yeah,
or like people seeking out self-care through that medium. And it is kind of it's honestly a little bit annoying to me that it's become like the millennial pink of health.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like, great, we've got a handle.
Do you wellness
it. Yeah,
hashtag, yeah. Blessed.
And that's where there's like the performativity that's sort of wrapped up, yeah, in the concept of self-care bugs me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one reason why I think we're bad at it, is because it now has to be something that you wear as a badge of honor, mm-hmm, for other people to see.
Yeah, I think like you're totally like, I'm super not interested in the performative aspect of it. Like, I have a ton of deficits. The performative thing, I don't think is one of my personal crosses to bear. And so I'm really not interested in, and I think like that's probably why I had like this visceral reaction initially. I was like, oh, this is just about like getting good Instagram photos or something like that. That's all self-care is. But now, you know, I think it's suddenly become, you know, Ezra Klein, you'd sent me after the baby was born, you'd sent me that Ezra Klein podcast with, mm-hmm, an economist who had written a book about having kids and all of those things. And I've always been really, as much as I can, try to carry my weight of equal distribution of labor and those things. And what's funny now is that when you have a baby, like all of a sudden equal distribution of labor becomes like acutely present,
mm-hmm,
because there's so many things only the mother can do, right? Yeah. Feeding is a huge portion of the day, like hours in the day that you can't participate in. So I'm trying to like bend over in other ways to compensate for that. And he brings up like natalist policies and things like the way that we structure our days is not necessarily conducive to natalist policies being policies oriented towards people having kids or people with children, and that, like, America is really bad at natalist policies.
Shocker.
See maternity, paternity leave as an example.
So messed up.
And so I, you know, like, even now, genuinely asking the conversation of, like, what should I be doing about self-care when I have, like, a, you know, 5.5-month-old baby feels super selfish to me, but I'm realizing that it's not, if that makes sense. Like, I'm having that cognitive dissonance of, like, we need to do something, but I, you know, everyone sort of tunes into, like, you brought up the self-help stuff at, like,
yeah,
like Brené Brown or Marie Kondo or these, like, sort of figures, and, like, I don't connect with any of these people, and so I don't know, like, I'm sort of searching for what is, like, the appropriate amount or the thing that I can do for myself that sort of gives me, like, what I need without becoming, like, selfish of being like, I need to go to Southeast Asia for 2 weeks. Like, bye. You know, like, well, I would never do that, for the record.
You might.
Yeah.
No. What's interesting about it is that self-help feels like a unique, not a uniquely American phenomenon, but the idea of helping yourself, like being responsible for saving yourself from, like, modern society and all that, just feels very Horatio Alger. It feels very bootstraps. Like, the physical impossibility of picking yourself up by your bootstraps.
The old Horatio Alger reference.
Gotta throw them in there every once in a while.
Yeah.
But, like, it is physically impossible to pick oneself up by their bootstraps. And even this idea parallel to that of, like, self-help, that almost any problem is one that you can go internal and that you can solve on your own, is a fallacy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we are not the be-all, end-all of our own health. And when I go to, like, and I know that self-help and, like, your health are not exactly the same thing.
Right.
But, like, yeah, if you have a broken leg, you can just let it sit there and heal, but it might heal in a really terrible way, or it might not heal at all, or it might be some other type of fracture. You can't let some things that might be symptomatic of deeper issues, traumas, realities, be things that you just say, oh, I can fix it by myself. I don't need anybody who specializes this. Yeah. In this outside of myself to help me.
Yeah. And I think, like, the, you know, you, this idea of self-care too is sort of like, what is the thing you need? Like, if you have to kind of diagnose yourself a little bit and say, like, where is the personal deficit, or what is the thing that I can do for myself that is going to, like, rise the tides the most, or has, like, is getting the least attention. And I'm even realizing, like, I said I've never been particularly great at this, but there was always, like, little, like, even just finding time to be able to go to the gym. And it's, like, an hour. And it wasn't, you know, like, it was definitely something, like, to take care of my body. And you're getting, like, all kinds of, like, neurochemical benefits from it. But I was never, like, this is a thing for me. But now I'm realizing, like, in hindsight, like, that was, like, a thing that I could do. And so part of me is now saying, like, how do I go back and sort of critically analyze, like, the things that I need. And part of it also, I think, what the benefit and the downfall of what you were mentioning at the beginning of sort of, like, the millennial pink version of this is having a conversation about it is really positive. And then the question of, like, do I want to be attached to that? Like, is that conversation fit with my conception of a thing? Like, I grew up in like Northern New England. It's like a very puritanical mindset of, like, self-flagellation, Catholics, like, whipping themselves and, like, go to work, you know, get a job. And I look back and I can see that when, you know, my dad, I can see now moments now that I'm a dad of, like, when my dad was sort of, like, just sort of, like, burnt at both ends.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was working a 40-hour work week and then doing side work on top of it and all of those things, and had four kids, and you're like, oh, that's that thing that you were feeling.
Right, yeah. Right. And I mean, I think what's interesting about that is that there has been Like, life has been hard for a very long time, like for multiple generations.
Yeah.
Life has been difficult. And, you know, I've obviously already been coming out seeming as though I'm very anti-self-care, but I probably talk about it nonstop. Like, I'm very, very cognizant of needing to take care of myself and boundaries and fulfilling my soul, yada, yada, yada.
And boundaries and fulfilling my soul.
Like, God, I'm just the most annoying person like, I've ever met.
Looking at things and like doing stuff and then finding my existential bliss.
I spend a lot of time hunting for it. But if there's been, I do think that even though there has been, it's been hard for every generation. There's been a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
There are new pressures that are dragging our attention to 100 different places at once. Mm-hmm. Like, we are culturally forced and I would argue rewarded for being ADD, like for being able to ping pong back and forth from responsibility to interesting cultural ephemera to i.e. our podcast to like other things.
Mm-hmm.
And the bottom line is that there is only so much attention that any human being can give.
Yeah.
And we have to learn how to manage that.
Like, yeah.
We have to learn how to take care of ourselves and make sure that we can recharge and restore because the battery can get to empty.
Yeah. I think the other part of this too is that I think New York is sort of like a unique place where
you know you need unique New York.
I'm thinking about like friends who live outside of the city who mm-hmm. aren't good at golf but will go and just like
yes
you know play like nine holes or something, just like get on the course, be outside, do a thing for, you know, I don't know how long nine holes takes, 2 hours.
You're looking at the wrong
yeah
guy.
Yeah, but like just to be like, I'll go play, you know, the back nine real quick and then go home after work or something, and it's like a short detour, but it's like a thing for themselves, and they have that. In New York, I'm kind of like, what is that thing here? I think you have to work a little bit harder to find the spaces to do that outside mm-hmm. of like, you can do fitness, right? Like, cool that I can get class pass. I know that's a thing.
But even with fitness, like, I'm honing in on that one specifically. Like, it's the fitness takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And next thing you know, if you're traditionally not a morning person, you better become a morning person because you never know when your day is going to end. And you're like, and granted, like maybe this is a little bit of self-diagnosis, but figuring out how to make time for those things is difficult. And I think it's equally as difficult to find ways to switch your mind into the mode that it's actually like in that pseudo flow state.
Yeah.
It's like even this morning on the way into the podcast, lately I've been not listening to podcasts or audiobooks on the way in anymore or reading or anything because it's too much stimulation. And then it's yet another thing that my mind is analyzing.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, I'm listening to the Jurassic Park theme track.
I was hoping you were going to say something like, I've been listening to whale sounds.
Oh, that'd be even better.
On the subway.
No, reality is much more embarrassing. But I'm listening to it and I'm like letting my mind wander. And
yeah.
It's actually wandering. And honestly, I was like, oh, I don't remember the last time that I felt like my mind was wandering.
Yeah.
And not actively trying to solve a problem or, you know, plan for the future or whatever.
Do you think self-care is just play? And like we've aggrandized this concept of like take care of yourself and do these things for you and what, like, I mean, I'm sure there are other ways you can take care of yourself, of like, you know, I know I've heard women talk about like going to get like a mani-pedi as like a thing to do for yourself to make yourself feel good.
I did it 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah,
it does feel very good.
And maybe that fits in, but I'm also wondering, like, a lot of the things just feel like play, and maybe that's sort of the deficit of where my head is going, or at least for me personally, is like, where am I getting to play? Like,
well, I love the mindsets that are so different between work and play.
Yeah.
And I think that both can be applied to self-care.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of the self-care conversation is actually about work. So even like therapy is not easy. Therapy is not fun. Like, it's when it is effective, it is just poking at and finding every insecurity and making you say, like, look at it.
Yeah.
Look at yourself. And that takes work. That takes intention and energy in and of itself. But we don't usually, or I think that we are missing a beat at more often applying play to self-care.
Yeah.
And bringing that mindset up to it.
Well, yeah, because the reason that I even landed there was because, you know, I know people have talked about, like, I meditate every day or I do these other things. And I'm like, that sounds really nice, but it just feels like more work, mm-hmm. right? Like, mm-hmm. and that isn't necessarily, like, how I want to approach. So I don't want it to something to feel like work. I think, to your point, like, the search is for something to help create a little bit moment of separation and sort of like a bit of an oasis in some way from everything, and doing those things while I'm assuming would be highly beneficial. If I found, you know, the time to make sure I was meditating every day, I'm sure I would get a major benefit. I'm like, right now the thing that I want is just like some space where it's not like I'm completely turned off and just like immobile,
yeah.
but also sort of having an opportunity to play.
I think that there's something in there too with like, and it's been on my mind a lot the past week or so, but creation,
mm-hmm.
like
totally,
you're in that state of like just pure creativity for creativity's sake. And whether it's writing a novel or music or whatever, when you're in that space, it really does borrow a lot of play. And in theory, it is generative, but because it's like, it's so for the sole purpose of just being, like it's creation for the act of creation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really wonderful space to be in. And it feels really gratifying to walk out of that and just feel like, wow, I've created room for myself.
Yeah. Well, this is it.
This is it. Take care of yourself.
Just
make room for yourself.
Create space and have adult recess.
And come up with a term other than self-care, please.
Yeah, I think that's we just need some mess. We just need Olivia Pope to come in and handle our business.
My white coat's in the closet. I got you. We ready? Okay. Sorry, I was just Tiffany Haddishing on the mic.
I watched Night School last night, or what is it called?
Wait,
Tiffany Haddish
and Kevin Hart.
Kevin Hart. I was just, right. I was having to do some work at home that was like lighter thinking work. So I just put that movie on in the background. It was not good.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
It was shockingly not good. I mean, it had like individual moments of funniness that were just like not strung together in any coherent way.
Coincidentally, I watched Tiffany Haddish on David Letterman's Netflix show.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a lot of that this weekend. It was good.
Yeah.
She's great.
I've heard a few interviews with her recently, and she just like owns her crazy, and I love it.
Yes. She owns every space that she walks into, and I want just a little dose of that myself.
Yeah.
But actually, it coincides. Get on your scooter. This is a segue.
An old man on a Segway.
It's like the Six Flags guy. He's like, come on, kids. Let's go to Six Flags. This weekend, I had the weirdest experience on Sunday. I had gone out with some friends on Saturday, had some drinks or whatever, got back home on Saturday night, woke up on Sunday, and had like no energy whatsoever. I made it from the bed to the couch. And then I put on YouTube, and then I put on Netflix, and I found myself like falling asleep and waking up in waves and cycles for literally 8 hours. It was horrifying. So when I say that I watched the Tiffany Haddish interview with David Letterman,
yeah,
I saw like the snippets when my eyes and consciousness could spark in, and then I would like zone back out and fall back asleep. And I've been having issues with sleep for a long time. I've been toying around with potentially a sleep apnea issue, and I've been using Breathe Right strips in the interim. I've tried startup tools that inflate my pillow to try to help me stop snoring, melatonin, prescription strength things. I've gone through it all, and still I haven't exactly found a solution for getting better sleep. And I know that I'm not alone, and it just goes to a very simple question. Why can't we sleep?
Because our mom isn't yelling at us to go to sleep.
There's a lot to that.
You just need to get your mom on FaceTime when it's time for her bed, and she just, yeah, get your ass in bed. That's what, that's my mom.
I see. See, my mom is the opposite in the morning. She's always waking me. She was always waking me up when I was a kid, and it was good morning, good morning. She would always sing these little morning songs. That's my life.
Yeah, my mom's not a singer. She is like a drill sergeant.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised by that.
No, I think like the sleep thing is a huge, like there are, to your point in the last conversation, there are a lot of reasons probably why we're not sleeping. Like everything from screens to sort of generalized anxiety, mm-hmm. Of the way that culture is sort of shifted to, you know, just like trying to stuff everything into a day now too, right? Like you work hours are longer. And so then people are trying to like do fun things before or after work. And so mm-hmm. it's like the day is just getting longer. Like we're, you know, even now, like for myself, I would desperately love some sleep right now, but I'm also like, I have all these things to get done. Like, you know, like I start chipping away of like, oh, I'll just get up earlier tomorrow, or I'll finish it tonight and go to bed a little bit later. And there's sort of like invasive forces on both sides of my like going to sleep and waking up that are like trying to like chip away a war of attrition.
And you're not the only one. Like our generation, there's a lot of research out there about how little sleep younger generations are getting. And actually school age kids are even worse. And they're experiencing, you know, they're experiencing it in a very structured way where they've got like, you know, a certain number of hours of school that they have to go to. And then they've got the after school rehearsals, and then they've got the homework, and then they've got the extracurriculars that are intended to like build up their college resumes. And then they're trying to have fun and like, you know, decompress, and more kids are getting even less sleep. So it's like it's a multi-generational issue, and it's really sad. Like, we just because we are sleeping less doesn't mean that we need sleep less.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the rub of it all.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, there's like another force is sort of the glorification of certain entrepreneurs or CEOs or those types of people who are kind of publicly being, you know, what was the Steve Harvey thing recently? Like, clapping at his audience being like, rich people don't sleep 8 hours. Yeah. Like he was just like yelling at his audience at the end of his show for some
that
reason.
Sounds about right for Steve.
But you also have other, you know, like I listened to an interview on like Freakonomics or something. They've gone through like a series years ago of like CEOs and like high powered individuals, and the CEO of PepsiCo, like I think about this all the time, where she's like, I go to bed at like 1 or 2 and I'm up at 5 to go to like tennis practice. Yeah. And I'm like, what? And she's like getting home after spending all day like work or dinners or all of these things at like 11, emailing to like 1 or 2 and then going to tennis practice at 5. I'm like, how do you function?
Yeah. So I know that I can't. Like, I'm very aware, probably because I have so many sleep issues, of like how much sleep I need to be able to be effective. Because, especially with the type of work that we're doing, and we're ping ponging around from, you know, big ideas to small ideas, things you've never done before to things that you've done 1,000 times and you're trying to do better and differently and surprise yourself and others with. Like, it takes a lot of mental capacity to do that well.
Yeah.
And to help others do that well and to inspire them to do it well. So I am very aware when my battery is running down and I stop because yeah. I'm like, not only is the output going to not be as good, but then I'm going to end up doing it for a longer period of time as well. Because it's just taking me longer to like get to not even as good places otherwise. So I'm very firm about like when it's dipping, I'm like, let it dip, like stop. Because you will do it better tomorrow morning in a half an hour than you will tonight for 2.
Yeah.
And like that is absolutely a trade-off that I've finally seen and that thank goodness I pay attention to in myself.
Yeah, I used to have like, I would, and this scientifically isn't how things work, but this was how I did, like, I would eat away at my like sleeping hours during the week of, you know, like, all right, I'll get up earlier tomorrow and do that thing, or I'll stay up later tonight and do this thing and kind of chip away and get into that 6 or 5 hour zone of sleep as I needed. But I would always like go hard on the weekends. I would go hard in my sleep, you know, like sleep until 11 or something like that. Like I can very easily do that. And it doesn't fully compensate for, like, there is no paying back sleep debt, beyond like a day or two. But I would still like be like, all right, at least I have the weekend. Like I could see sleep in my future. And now I don't, but I think, you know, like this comparative thing, like I think there is this conversation about successful people and their relationship to sleep is often false because we're cherry picking the stories that we talk about it, but then we're creating sleep guilt.
Yeah. Oh my God. I've got a friend who, he wears too many hats. He's amazing. But he started a new job maybe about a year ago. Before then, he was working in politics on the campaign trail. And we'd be on trips together. And aside from him working at like from 2 to 5 in the morning and then wake, and this is on vacation, like in the islands, then doing yoga from like 5 to 6 on the back patio. And then he would go for a run like around the island. And then he would come back and make breakfast for the house when we're all waking up. And that is after going out the night before. So he would always say like, I only need like an hour, like 3 hours of sleep, like 4 hours of sleep. I'm fine. He was asleep all the time. Like at the dinner table, he would be falling asleep with his phone in his hand while he's sending messages about work. And I like, listen, I get the need to produce. And I get that we live in a culture that glorifies and rewards like hyper productivity at the expense of your own physical health. That's just true.
Yeah.
So if those things are facts, like I can get it, but I'm choosing not to, cause I don't know how sustainable that is. And I know for me, I would be, I'd be in a bad place real fast.
Yeah. I think there's also, we run into, as it relates to sleep, some of the same issues we run into with the science of nutrition, that there are competing stories, and maybe there is sort of like, if you're digging deep enough, there is sort of like a clear scientifically agreed upon perspective on how much sleep you need or how to do it or whatever. I think like there are some loose rules of thumb that are generally agreed on, but like even like relationship to naps and things like that. Like I know historically we had a better relationship with naps, whether it was like in agrarian cultures, like midday sun, like get out of the sun and, you know, take a nap or whatever it is, like in sort of the context of like the modern working world, there isn't a relationship for like rest within the context of work, and work is, you know, clearly like a glorified and an important aspect of our, at least the American culture.
Yeah. And I mean, we haven't, like pre-industrial revolution, there's a lot of evidence that we actually used to sleep differently. So we didn't do 1 8-hour chunk. We actually did a couple of hours at night. We would wake up and there was like a stretch in the middle of the night where most people were awake.
Really?
Which is kind of wild. There's a professor over at Virginia Tech who wrote a book about it. His name is Roger Eckrich, I believe. Corrections department will be coming for me on that one.
Yeah.
But he wrote a book all about this phenomenon of like the extra hours that were in the middle of the night where people would be awake and active and potentially visit neighbors and things like that, but then go right back to sleep and then have another stretch of sleep. And this was all based on, or this changed, I should say, at the onset of the Industrial Revolution. That's when having, you know, shift work in and of itself meant there had to be certain longer stretches where you could get rest because you didn't have, it started to pinch that that time outside of work, outside of the factory, all of that. And it's just kind of like, now granted, that's at night. Was there a lot of sleep during the day? I don't know. He didn't talk about that in the book from what I could tell.
Well, the interesting part of that too is, right, like in the winter, in those times, like you have a 13-hour, 14-hour, depending on what latitude you live at, like dark period in the middle of at night, and like you're not going to sleep from sunset to sunrise. And so it sort of seems logical. It's wild that people were like having gaps. But the other part of it too was that sleeping, most people lived in like a 1 to 2 room living like situation, right? Like you lived with your entire family in that room. Like everything was happening in that room. Like your parents were making your siblings in the same room that you were like eating dinner. Everyone was sleeping in the same place. Like our relationship to sleep, sex, like all of those things were like very different in that context. And like we've increasingly compartmentalized, like this is your sleep time, this is your work time, this is like things were a little bit looser at that point, I think.
And the open concept floor plan hasn't totally fixed it.
Yeah.
Just saying.
This is just like a rant, like just upset.
Well, I am. Well, so I do love the open concept floor plan, but my fear, I guess, is that like there doesn't seem to be, so like the sleep industry, for example, has grown like crazy. And there are a lot of different estimates of its size, but like conservative estimates somewhere between 28 and 70 billion. That's a really broad range. Yeah. On the high end, 120 billion. But this whole industry has been growing really rapidly in the past 5 to 10 years or so. And you see it with all different types of products. You see it with the inflatable pillows that are trying to make me not snore. But even like luxury bedding, like there's so many different companies that are growing right now as a result of trying to make sleep better and more effective. But I worry that it's almost become so popular because good sleep feels so completely out of reach.
Mm-hmm.
Like the more that it feels out of reach, the more sellable sleep is, the dream and hope of sleep itself. And the irony that we are dreaming of sleep, daydreaming of sleep, is not beyond me. And it makes me a little bit nauseous.
Yeah.
And tired.
Yeah. I need a nap. Yeah.
Sorry, that was the baby keeping me awake.
Got it. Check. Yeah. I mean, I think hopefully with that much money pouring into it, the science gets better. And there may already be good science, but that science starts to inform the way that we're doing things. Like even recently I've seen stuff around like the appropriate temperatures that you should be that I'd never heard discussed before. And maybe it is like older science, but is sort of like starting to emerge and people go ahead.
Are you a cold sleeper or a warm sleeper?
Like my body?
Or the room. Do you like a cold room or
hot room? I prefer cold room.
I'm also very cold room.
I think in general, like people sleep better when it's cold. Like we're seeing stuff now about like, if you want to extend your baby's nap times, make sure that the room is between 68 and 72 degrees. Like, and we like got the temperature lower in her room when she's taking naps and it worked. Like,
there you go.
So like there is some merit to this stuff. I think, you know, getting smarter about these things can only help. But also just like having these conversations about like it's okay to sleep and you're not like a bad person if you're prioritizing sleep and all of those things, like you're not a lesser participant in society and culture.
And that you won't lose the American dream by sleeping.
Yeah.
I think that is a really critical thing for especially in our highly entrepreneurial, highly like side hustle oriented world today, to remember like you can't hustle if you can't stand up.
Yeah.
Like you need to get some sleep.
You want to hear a scary stat that I heard recently?
Tell me.
That people that around 7 hours a night is actually like if that's what you need and are good with, I guess, that's sort of like the ideal window for longevity. And that like if you're sleeping like 8+ hours a night or sub 6, like consistently, and that's what you're getting, like the long-term ramifications are there. And I was like, really? Now we're like going, we're making people feel bad with science about sleeping.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Science is a moving target, friend. Why is it always an like a weird old-timey
1920s? Yeah.
Yeah, he's a mobster that just has opinions about everything, like sleep. I'm sorry. But yes, science is a moving target. We need to appreciate that we should bob and weave with it.
Or just sleep under it.
Oh.
Under the boughs of the old sleep science tree.
Critical Nonsense is a Sylvain Labs production.
Recorded in beautiful New York, New York. Ed MacGyver Studios.
Ed MacGyver Studios. We'd like to thank executive producer and Hunter S. Thompson impersonator Jess Vander.
We'd like to thank Siesta occasional taker Alex Contel.
We'd like to thank Nora Mestrich for having a firm 10 p.m. bedtime.
Yes, very true, actually. And the sheep that get counted as they jump over your head, the production team of Tony Vong, Zara Gilbert, and Les Jacobs.
And as always, thanks, Alain.
Thank you.
I'd like to give special thanks to those sheep.
Yeah. Oh, the Syrtis sheep specifically.
Yeah.
I love them. I also want to thank... I actually have a list. I literally made a list of thanks for today.
Let's go.
Just going to hit a few. So I want to thank Phillips Hue, because I finally set up my apartment with those bulbs, and yep. I was able to dim the lights before bedtime this past week. Wow. Sleeping better.
I am so into that.
Yes.
Yeah, we do. We have them too. That was like one of the first smart home things I got, and I love it.
So good. I'd also like to thank Steven Spielberg, because Jurassic Park. We already went there.
Yeah, check.
I want to thank Donna Summer, because your last name is the same name as the season we're in. Love you.
You just thank Donna Summer every summer?
I do. I also want to thank Mae Jemison, just, you know, Black Girl Magic. So just why not? Because, you know, go to space. And I want to thank Utada Hikaru, because J-pop is always good. And as I'm listening to some of the Kingdom Hearts 3 soundtrack, it's making me very excited and sleepy.
Can we add a special thanks to the Flux app?
Oh, yeah. Take out that blue light.
Yeah. Although now Apple has added it, and I think Google's added it to everything. So they kind of crushed Flux's good idea.
It's true.
But I still downloaded it anyway. I don't know. You don't pay for it, and it's not ad supported. So I think that was just them being like nice to the world and being like, get the blue light out your life.
You know what? I was thinking about it. I was going to unthank blue light, period. But I'm going to thank blue light for helping us wake up when we need to. I'll thank blue light for that.
Fine, blue light. I'd also like to thank soft couches.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep.
I'd like to thank hammocks.
Oh, yeah.
I asked for a hammock a few years ago. My parents gave me one, and I wanted it purely for napping. And they got it for me for my birthday, except for they just got the hanging part. And it was not like a small... It was like 4 feet wide. And so I just gave it to some friends, and they got it set up recently. And they've sent me pictures of them napping in the hammock, and I'm so upset.
That's real sad.
I'm so happy for them and also just so jealous.
Ooh, I want to thank White Noise Machines.
White noise machines, check.
Very, very strong addition to the bedroom. Real helping with the sleeping.
Yeah, I'd like to thank fans.
Move that air circulation around. That's both applicative.
I'd like to thank my high school psychology teacher for teaching us tricks to go to sleep. One of them was just saying, starting from your toes and just like moving up as small or big of body parts as you can, and saying, your toes are heavy. Your toes are heavy and warm. And you just keep repeating that, moving up your body. It works every time for me.
If you're driving, wake up.
Yeah.
That's cool. I'd like to thank you, Joey.
I'd like to thank you. Aww. I'd like to thank Alex for taking a siesta right now.
He's totally not taking a siesta.
Okay, thanks.
Bye. This week, Aaron asked Joey about... Nope.
You went full radio voice.
Yes, I did. I was like, this week.
Critical Nonsense.
Yeah.